Hi, I'm Tim Marshall. Welcome to R&B Showcase, giving you the best in classic contemporary R&B through the decades. We got some special guests in the house, but first, I want to introduce to you my co-host. Joining us in the studio today is Mr. Kevin White, music historian himself. Kevin, what's happening, brother?
You're too kind. Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
Glad to have you with us here. Julian Seward from WPPM 106.5 FM in Philadelphia. What's happening, Julian?
Everything is good.
And of course, we got the one and only Kyle Mack in the studio, our producer and a radio host, and it's good to have you here with us, Kyle.
Always thankful to be here, Tim.
Right now, we have a special guest we're going to introduce to you. He's a musician, a recording artist, a singer, a songwriter, and he is performing now with one of the greatest groups in American popular music history, one of the Motown greats, the Fabulous Four Tops. We're going to welcome to the show the incomparable Mr. Ronnie McNair. Let's give Ronnie a round of applause, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome Ronnie to the show.
What's happening, y'all?
What's happening, man? What are you doing?
I'm just a guy that's fortunate to have a good job.
Listen, man, we thank you for taking the time to come on the show here today. And it took us a while to get you here, but we're glad you're here. We got you.
My man.
How you doing, man? How's everything going? Now, are you on the road now or currently touring?
We've been off a month. We're getting ready to go back Wednesday, go to the West Coast.
Okay.
I get to play my winter golf. I'll be in Arizona, Palm Springs, then we go to Hawaii, then we come back to Dallas, then I come back to the snow.
Oh, yeah, how about that? We're supposed to be getting a little more snow coming in here, but it's good to have you on the show here today. And listen, you've been with the Four Tops. Now, in addition to Duke Fakir, the original member, you are the longest tenured member with the Four Tops now, right? In addition to Duke.
It's been 22 and a half years, and it'll be 23 in March.
Wow. Congratulations on that. And I want to ask you, what was it like? How did you get started with the Four Tops? How did you become a member?
Say that again.
How did you become a member of the Four Tops? How did this come about?
That's kind of like a Cinderella story. I was, first of all, Ronaldo Benson, who was an original member of the group. You know, O.B. Benson was coming. He's the one that, you know, he's one of the writers on What's Going On,
okay,
Save the Children, and Holy, Holy, Holy off of Marvin Gaye's album. Mm-hmm. So he kind of took me under his arm. We met each other in the early 70s, around 74. And, man, we just had a wonderful whole 34 years before we passed together. Mm-hmm. And anyway, I moved to Las Vegas from Detroit. I mean, from Pontiac, Michigan. I'm sorry. Okay. That's where I'm from, Pontiac, Michigan. Mm-hmm. I moved there to Las Vegas in 1990. Okay. And I went there and I played the lounges and stuff there. And around 2000, mm-hmm, Obi called me and said, "Hey, man, our music director, he plays the piano, is having trouble with his kidney, so we need you to come in and play." So he was looking out for me because he knew I was out there, man, and I was, you know, in Las Vegas, you know, you got 24 hours to do whatever you want to do. So he probably knew, get me out the street, you know. He pulled me in and I started playing piano. I wasn't the music director, but I played piano while George Roundtree was gone. Mm-hmm. So he came back and Duke came to me and said, "Hey, man, we want you to stay." And I said, "And do what?" He said, "We want you to just hang, man, because this guy might go in the toxic shop." You know, so they had me stand around. Then one day, dude came to me and said, "Man, start learning the background and steps." So I looked at him. I said, "Okay." So, you know, he said, "This is a real job now. I know you just standing around, but this is a job." I said, "Okay." Mm-hmm. They were giving me $300 a day with expenses paid, man, everything. So, mm-hmm, I said, "Okay. Maybe you don't have to hustle this hard in Las Vegas." But anyway, it was a good thing. So, around March of, when was it? 2000, yeah, around March in 2000. In that summer, mm-hmm, it was around July. And Levi got sick, man, okay, and couldn't make the gig. Now, we were already in South Carolina at the gig, mm-hmm, to open up for the Beach Boys.
Oh, wow, great show.
It's one thing when you can't make the gig and you're not there. Mm-hmm. But when you're at the gig and, mm-hmm, talking about you can't come on stage, that's another thing. Wow. Mm-hmm. So they came to me and said, "You know, you haven't heard the news that Levi sick, can't make the gig." So the first thing came to me was, "Oh, so we can't get paid?" The guy said, we got to pay today's pay with yesterday's money. Mm. So something told me to say, I said, "Well, man, if I put my tuxedo on and go up on that stage, will we get paid?" And our manager was Ron Strassman, and he said, "Man, Ronnie, can you do it? I said, nah, never, man. I've been here standing around for some months. I said, you know. He said, man. So he called Duke up, and Duke said, Ronnie, I'd love to give him 40 minutes. Can you do it? I said, I'll tell you like I told Ryan, Duke, it's now or never, man. You know, I ain't going to just keep standing up here. So before I could put my tuck on, the valet man said, come here, man. See, can you wear these pants? And they threw Levi's suit on me. Now, check this out. Levi got long arms. Mm-hmm. I'm 6'2". Well, okay. I'm about 6'1". Now, mm-hmm. But I was somewhere in there. I was in that range. So he put the coat on me and fit. But his pants, man, I was flooded. Mm. I had to wear the pants so low. Mm. You know what I mean? I wore my pants so low, but with the coat on me, you couldn't. I was like one of them boys that wear their pants down, you know, behind me. That's how I was. So I had my own shoes. I was 12 and a half, almost 13. So I got my own shoes. Mm. So anyway, I went out on stage, man. And the secret thing that we had really made that work. They had a guy named Theo Peoples that was already in the back with the Tops. When Lawrence first died, the first Top died, Theo had been there 2 years. Mm-hmm. So when your hub, you lose your hub of a wheel, but you got another hub back there. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And when it came time to step up, naturally Theo's voice was the kind of voice that he could get up there and lead by his key with that strength. Mm-hmm. I'm more of a Marvin Gaye singer like that, you know. Huh? Mm-hmm. So, but he, man, we walked out on stage and we did 3 nights straight.
Mm.
And that was my debut with them. And let me tell you something, man, I was nervous.
Mm.
When I walked out and I had to sing Ask the Lonely.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked out on stage, man, my hands started trembling with the mic. And so George was back, the music director. He looked at me. And so I said, you know what? I can't do this. So I started walking back and forth like I knew what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since then, man, when January of 2001 came, Levi retired and Duke said, you got the spot.
Mm.
I've been a Four Tops from January the 1st till this today.
Well, congratulations, man, on that. Become a member of the Four Tops.
I'm blessed, man.
So when you were filling in for the opening slots, when you're doing the shows with the Beach Boys, correct? When Levi got sick, did Levi get better and then you had to go back to the Wings and then you came back as a member of the Four Tops after that when he retired?
No. When Levi saw that I could do it, that it worked, no matter, you know, when he saw that, he came to me about a few weeks later, and I was saying, this is another really funny story here. He came back to me and says, one day he walked up to me and said, suit up, man. I looked at him, I said, man, you hear what you talking about? He said, I don't feel like it. But the guy, you know what? But now I can see why Obie brought me in the beginning. He knew I was a jack of all trades in the music part. Mm-hmm. See? So he was looking out for the whole group there. When Levi came and said that, I said, okay. So this particular time when he wanted me to suit up, we were at the Westbury up there in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, theater in the round.
Okay.
We were open. We were with Gladys Knight.
Okay.
So when it came time, they wore white satin suits with royal blue shirts and white shoes.
Mm-hmm.
I ain't got no size 13 white shoes. Mm-hmm. I got my black shoes.
Mm-hmm.
So we went all day trying to find them. We couldn't find them because it was too close to the gig when he said, suit up. So then I said, man, I'm not going on the stage with no black shoes on and no white suit and no whatever kind of shirt they had on. I said, I ain't going. Mm-hmm. And so Obie said, I'll wear my black shoes. I said, what you going to have to do? Because I ain't going. And so finally, when it came down time to go down the ramp, I said, I can't do this to him. And I walked down the ramp, man, with my black shoes on, my white suit and the shirt. So when we got up on the stage, the first thing I heard from the crowd is, where's Levi? So, you know, I'm embarrassed right there, but I'm trying to help save the day. Mm-hmm. Then somebody hollered up, what's up with the black shoes?
Oh, wow.
Wait a minute. So, Kim, I looked over at Duke. Duke, I said, man, you better explain this. I'm walking off today. Mm-hmm. You know. And Duke made the story up that the clothes didn't get there late and shoes didn't come. But that's what happened, Kyle. He would come to me and tell me to suit up. And not only that time, it was about a couple of other times.
Mm-hmm.
And when we Levi, the last gig that Levi did, we did the Last Supper. I guess that's what you call it for Clinton when he was going out of office. Mm-hmm. He had a dinner in December. Mm-hmm. And that was the last time Levi performed with us. Mm-hmm. So, and then January of 2001, I became a full-fledged thing. Mm-hmm. 2001, I came a full-fledged fourth time. Wow. Thank the Lord.
Wow. Now, didn't you do the TV special they had when Aretha Franklin was on and they brought Levi out in the wheelchair? Were you part of that that special? The four top.
Oh, yeah.
Is that
yeah.
the 40th Matter or 50th anniversary?
Yeah, Obi and myself is the ones who pushed him out in the wheelchair.
Okay. Okay. And he sang some.
And Theo sang,
I Believe in You and Me.
While he was singing it with Aretha.
Aretha, yeah. That's a great concert. That whole concert is good, you know, you guys.
Yeah, it brings a lot of feelings and memories into it, man. Mm. Did you see how he sang, when he sang his part? You could still see why he was leaving.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he could still sing. Even you know, being wheelchair, he could still sing.
You know,
he had his gift.
Kevin and I had just watched it. I forgot that I had the DVD of that special, and I pulled it off the shelf, and Kevin and I had just watched it, maybe 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, that was about 2 weeks ago, yeah. A lot of fun.
Yeah. The special still holds up as such an entertaining experience. Mm-hmm. We love that. And I also have they put it out on CD as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was our 50th.
Yeah,
right.
Okay. Yeah, it was great concert. So you've been there ever since, man. I congratulate you on your success with the Four Tops, and I'm glad you're keeping it going though. I'm glad you're keeping it going, keeping it moving.
I have a question. So not too long after you joined the Four Tops, a couple of years, you guys put out a CD called "Going Home Round Midnight" with a jazz group.
Yeah, Simone Vattel.
Right. And it had a limited release. I believe it was released only on the Jazz Group's website. What brought that about? Because to my understanding, that was probably the last full-length album that you guys had done.
That is the only album other than the Christmas album in 1998, I think.
Right.
That the Four Tops had done since 1980-something. Wow. That's the only new music that the Four Tops put out. Like you said, it was that jazz album and only the Christmas album.
Right. And I listened to that jazz album from start to finish a bunch of times when it came out. But
I think what they were trying to do was do like the Temptations did with Forever Yours. I think that was the name of that one. They did a theme with a lot of standard songs on it.
Right. Oh, For Lovers Only.
For Lovers Only.
Lovers Only.
Yeah.
Lovers Only. There you go.
Yeah.
And then you do something on Back to Class with Drew Schultz. Couple songs on there. Sure.
But I'm talking about on a major, we never had anything since the 80s, man, as a whole album other than that jazz album. Right. Christmas.
So that had been what, when She Was My Girl album was the last one?
That was the Indestructible, probably.
Oh, don't tell me that is over and all those songs. That was.
I think it was on Casablanca, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been a while since I'm, you know.
Yeah, had a song on it, one of my most favorite songs of the Four Tops, and we'd never do it because it probably didn't get a lot of play. Mm. A song called Sexy Ways.
Oh, I remember that. That's a good song. That did well in Philadelphia.
I've been telling them all the time, we need to do Sexy Ways, y'all. Somebody heard it.
Yeah, that's a good song. That did well in Philadelphia. You know, we got a lot of airplay on the stations here in Philly. So that's a good thing, man. So now, with the Four Tops, you said you were the music director for a little while with the group?
No. I was never the music director. I just came in and played piano.
Okay. Tell us about your instruments now. You're a musician. How many instruments do you play and what instruments do you play?
Piano is only my real instrument. I mean, nowadays they got synthesizers that have all kinds of sounds on it. So naturally, I'm a keyboard player. When you got a horn, you can play a horn line. You just play it. But the good thing about me is I've stood in front of 10 horns for 22 years.
Okay.
I've stood in front of a guitar. Drums. I know what you're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can easily reenact that when you're doing this stuff with this, all this new music they got and the synthesizer and stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's nothing like the real thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's coming back to that.
Really. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I like the way you incorporate the piano playing in your show today.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah. Exactly. One of the highlights of the show that I just saw was when during this Christmas, when you come in and play the keyboards and then T comes out and sings. That's that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is. It's great.
You know how that started though?
No.
I would ask them for a long time, man, Four Tops would not do what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I would ask Obi all the time. I said, man, said, Obie, how come y'all don't ever do What's Going On, man? That don't make sense, man. One of the biggest songs ever done. Mm-hmm. And he would tell me, he said, well, you know, don't worry about that, man. Just all the money come to the bank. So I didn't ask no more about any of that. But mm-hmm. I kept on, even when Obie was gone, when he left us, mm-hmm. I kept saying, dude, come on, man. Somebody needs to do this. One of the greatest songs mm-hmm. ever, man. Come on. Yeah. One of your boy, your mm-hmm. brother, wrote mm-hmm. it. Come on. Mm-hmm. So finally, they gave in. They let me do it. Mm-hmm. So as we were doing it, one day I told Turan, I said, Turan, mm-hmm. see, well, I'll go over and play the little solo in between What's Going On, mm-hmm. too. That's how I start.
Okay.
So when I walked over, I told Turan, I said, Turan, you know what? When I go to play, when I go to get my mic from you, why don't you take it and act like you're still in the mic? Mm-hmm. Oh, man, people love that's that great, from then on. Yeah. So it worked with any time I go and play the piano. Mm-hmm. If it was anything, mm-hmm.
right.
He comes over there. And one night, you know, he got me that first night. Well, I don't know when you saw it when we did that mm-hmm. This Christmas. But I wasn't looking for him. He was supposed to give me the mic back. Uh-huh. And right. it really did good because he took the mic and ran.
He kept on going, didn't he?
Yeah, that's awesome.
The crowd loved it, man. Yeah. The crowd loves
it. Oh, yeah. That's a great bit. Yeah, you got to keep that in there. You got to keep that as part of the show, man. That's fantastic. Yeah. It's great to see you, you know, you musicianship too from the guys in the group. I think it's awesome.
Yeah, well,
go ahead, Kevin.
Another thing I wanted to ask Ronnie about is actually a little bit before your time with the Tops. I just recently figured out that you actually participated in a song I love. I Couldn't Believe It by Ruffin and Kendrick.
Ooh,
can you tell me a little bit about that?
Oh, wow.
I just stumbled across that. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Excellent. I wrote that. When did we do that? That was in the kind of the mid-80s, I think.
Yeah, about 86, maybe.
I'm going to tell you how that came up. David yeah. Ruffin, he went to prison for some taxes, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Obie, me and one of my writing partners, Mike Crump, we wrote the song.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Obie, I said, Obie, I hear David's getting out of it. Could you do something for us?
Mm-hmm.
I said, take this song and see what David do. And I said, if you do, we'll give you a third of it, man, with us.
Mm-hmm.
And so he took it. David came to my house, man, mm. in Pontiac,
mm.
and sang the song on a four-track recorder for me. Now, when he did that, that did something for me
right.
to take time out. Here's a guy that sung My Girl.
Right. Mm.
Come to my house
mm-hmm.
and sang that song for me, man. And you know what? I told him afterwards, I said, David, if I don't make a dime, man, I am so flattered and so great. So thankful that the man who sung My Girl thought to sing my song. Mm-hmm. And you know what he said to me? He looked at me and said, I did this song because I respect your talent and don't you forget it.
Mm-hmm.
And that made me feel so
that's
good,
awesome.
Man.
That's awesome. Awesome.
For him, I said, okay, mm-hmm. you respect my talent. I ain't did mm-hmm. nothing. I mean, I've done some things, but mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. but he said, nah, man, you deserve me to do your song.
Mm-hmm.
And wow. That's how that went.
That's a great story.
Yes, it is, man. That's awesome. Yeah. Now, you've done some producing in your career, Ronnie? Have you done any producing?
I've produced a lot. Let me tell you something I'm really proud of. A lot of people don't even know I did. I produced a song on Rance Allen
mm-hmm.
called, the album's called Feel Like Going On.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote a song, one of my songs I wrote on that album is called God Can Do the Impossible.
Mm-hmm.
And man, you talking about. I don't know if you've ever heard that. Have you heard that, Tim?
The name is going to fast me.
If you have it, look it up.
I will do that.
And listen mm-hmm. to Rance's performance on that. Okay. Man, I was in awe. Because mm. he's one of the greatest artist singers you could ever find, man. Mm-hmm. And this cat did my song so much justice, man. Mm-hmm. But it was with Fantasy Records. Mm-hmm. They didn't really push it, you know.
Is that the ones out of Philadelphia, Kevin? Fantasy Records? Is that Philadelphia?
No, I don't believe they're out of Philly. Okay. I want to say New York.
Was it New York?
Fantasy.
Oh, Fantasy Records.
Oh, no. Fantasy was out of Berkeley, California.
Berkeley. Okay. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
There's a lot of artists on there.
Their big group was, oh, man. God. Come on, man.
Mm-hmm. They had a lot of artists on that label, though. I remember the
fact. I can't think of that group, man. I don't know why I can't think of that. I'm getting old, Tim.
That's all right, brother.
Yeah, I know in the 90s or late 80s, they signed a lot of R&B acts. So, like, mm-hmm. I think the Spinners put out an album on Fantasy. Okay. The Dramatics put out an album on Fantasy. Yeah.
They bought the label. They bought Sax label after Sax went downtown. And then they never really did anything to push the stuff.
Got you. Mm-hmm. Got you.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of albums, I want to ask you if you can see this album. What does this album mean? This album right here, what does this album mean to you? Tell us about this album right here.
Let me tell you. I woke up one night. I was with this company called Prodigal Records, and I had a song called Wendy Is Gone Out that did pretty well cross country. It didn't do the South that well. I was with Barney Ailes, one of the big shots in the business. And one night I went to sleep with Prodigal Records. I woke up the next morning and his son called me and said, "You know what? You heard the news?" I said, "What news?" "No, we're with Motown now." I said, "Well, you with Motown? I ain't with no Motown." He said, "No, man, my dad sold the company." I said, "He ain't sell me. He sold you and everybody, the secretary." And I said, "Man, how you going to do me like this?" So I went and had a talk with Barney. I said, "Barney, how you going to do that, man? We got a hit record cross country. Man, why would you do that?" He said, "He gave me an offer. I can't refuse, man." I said, "So what I'm going to do now?" He said, "We're going to work it out." So anyway, I go out to California trying to, we're negotiating this new contract. I'm already in a contract, but I'm negotiating this new stuff with them. I'm walking inside Joe Bett, which is one of their publishing companies. I'm walking around, man, and I hear this girl singing. And so I asked the secretary, I said, "Who is that?" This is a little white girl. I said, "You lying." And I went around the corner, and here she was in a little room playing a guitar, man, with a band around her head. She was jamming too, and I walked in and I said, "Hey, my name is Ronnie McNair." I said, "What's your name?" She said, "Tina Marie." I said, "Well, you got a project here?" She said, "No, they just used me to do demos for Diana Ross and Thelma Houston." I said, "Look at here, you sound black. You know what?" I said, "I'm gonna ask Mr. Gordon, can I do something with you?" I called him up, I said, "Hey." I said, "Look here, man, you got a girl, you sound black. Let me do something on her, man." All right, Ron. "Is how you know you're talking about that." So I went on and did it. Man, it was like magic. She went in that studio and she wrote, and we did an album, man, called Rare Tea. They kept it in the can for a long time, and they called me to come out there. It was demos, and they still had me come out to try to remix it to good enough. Because they took her away from me. After 8 songs, they said, "We think you're continuing the wrong direction." I said, "What are you talking about?" Said, "It took you 8 songs to see that?" And she wrote 5 of them, and then I said, "We want her to be a rock artist." And I looked at Suzanne DePass and the rest of them. I said, "Y'all crazy. This girl got black in her throat. She's going to be an R&B artist or a jazz artist." That's just what she ended up being. But they took it from me. That's all right. Yeah. But see, one thing, I think what happened was I showed them who she really was. They were just using her for them demos. When they heard her on 8 different songs and seen what kind of arsenal she had in her voice. We can't let her get away from you.
She's one of the all-time
greats. That meant a great deal to me, that album. You asked me what it was. And that was my second appearance on Soul Train.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah.
You took the words out of my mouth. That's what's going to ask you about now. Now, we've all asked this question to our guests in some kind of capacity just because of how unique and monumental it is to each person that's been on Soul Train. So what was that first experience like for you, that first time that you were able to be on Soul Train, leading up to it, that experience of, you know, getting that call and understanding that you can actually, you know, be on the show? What was that like for you?
Well, you know, it was like, you know, how you do a dream come true. You do what you got to do. But when the good things happen, you sometimes you're so in awe. And I was. And I was nervous about that. I said, "Soul Train? Oh, man." You know, so when I went on, and it wasn't with the Tina. Tina was second. Tina came 10 years later. But when I first got on there, I got on there, man, not when I was on the stage, and you pantomime that show, you know, you don't really, you can't sing with the record, but you really pantomime. So when I was up there, man, and I looked out there, and, you know, it's different from when you're looking at it on TV. It's just like when you look at football. You look at football on TV, it's a whole lot different than when you're at the live anything. So I was standing up there, man, and I saw people dancing, and I just thought about how blessed I was. I never forget about where I come from. Because Ain't nothing promised, man. So for me to be on Soul Train that first time was a godsend.
What is the studio like? Is it small? Is it a big studio? What was it? What was it actually like? The studio.
It was a pretty good sized studio. You know, it was good. That's what I'm saying. It is when you see things on TV, it's so much different than live. It's not as big as you would think it was on TV. But it was a nice sized studio to get all those dancers in. They had at least like 20 dancers, something like that.
Now, when you're doing your performances on Soul Train, do you do both? Like, if you do usually do two songs, most of the artists do two songs. Do you do them back to back, or do they do it in the order they do them on television? Like, they do a song, take a break, and come back.
Do them on the order that's in television.
Oh, they do it like in live order. Okay, so they stop and does the next act come on? Then you come back on after them. They do it the way that they've shown on television.
Yeah, I don't know if there was another act on with me that day. You talking about a long time, Tim. I'm trying to think. Because I don't know. Yeah, because when you do two songs, I think you only have that one act. I think.
Okay.
I don't. If you have one song, they might have two acts. But I can't really remember if there was another act.
It's such an iconic television
that we did. I didn't do it back to back. Then they did some dancing, and then I came on.
Okay, so they pretty much do it in show order then. That's pretty good to be able to do it that way. So, all right, so you talked about your first appearance on there. Now, talk about being on there with Tina Marie. That's a classic episode. Talk about that experience.
At the time that happened, that was 10 years. I had left Motown right after they told, they weren't doing nothing with my career. And I told Barney Ennis, I said, Barney, look here, man. We came here with a record on the charts. I was number 77 in Billboard with a bullet. And they just let the record die. That kind of broke. That kind of did something to me. I said, you know what, man? And they said, well, this is a company where you have to wait your time. I said, I'm not waiting. My time, wait my time for what? My time is here. I got a record out there. They don't want to push it. So I wrote Barry Gordy a letter. And I said, sir, my mom and dad still living, man. You ain't gonna do nothing with me. Would you please let me go? I don't want to blame this on you. That's just how I said in the letter, man. I said, I don't want to blame this on you. You got 28 acts. You telling us all we're gonna be a star. I done been in this, man. I understand what this is all about. But if you're not gonna do nothing with me, please let me go. I done been with some other people. Didn't do nothing with me. Come on, man. And you know what? He wrote me back and said, you're absolutely right. And that's been my man ever since. Then he told me, you want to get your check a few months later after you're gone. I said, you'll do that? He said, yeah, man. Man gave paid me my salary for almost 4 months after I left there, man.
Awesome.
He my man. I don't care what they say about it. You hear me?
So the song, you know, we got to stop. Meeting Like This, man. Just an incredible song. And that was on one of her, I think that was one of Tina's biggest albums, wasn't it? Kevin?
But let me tell you this, Tim. Nothing happened for me after I left the hometown. I had a few things going on. I did this to that. So I'm sitting up there in my house. And one thing I always did, I don't care about whatever's happening, man. I'm out on the street, wasting my time, whatever I'm doing. The one thing I always did, play the piano and practice. So I got a call one day, and it was Tina. 10 years later, man, she said, Ronnie, this is Tina. I said, hey, baby. She said, look, can you come to L.A.? I said, I need you to sing. I said, I could have came yesterday. And so she sent me a ticket. And the song was in a higher key, man.
Okay.
But I was in shape, too. I went out there, man, and did that song right on the spur of the moment. She went out there, and we dogged it. And so then she took me to up there on Rodeo Row. This is funny, man. And we got some stuff that they were going to take it back. I didn't know all that, but we went up there and they got me some $800 suede pants, some $1,500 shoes. The coat was $1,500. And our shirt was $500. And so I said, oh, boy, I'm shocked. And I had on some Fruit of the Loom dogs. But wait a minute. So I went on the show, man. And so we had no kind of, I said, well, what we going to do, baby? We ain't got no kind of thing we going to do. So she said, I don't know. I said, look here, you little, just follow me. Just don't let me go. Whatever I do with you, don't let me go. Mm-hmm. So if you see the video, mm-hmm. I slung her around, slung her back.
I saw it.
And like we used to dance or something, yeah. you know, shit. I slung her and put in my arm and sent her over. She was right with me. Mm-hmm. And it worked. Mm-hmm. And Don Cornelius told me after that show, he said, "Ryan, this is one of the best shows I've ever had." Mm-hmm. I said, "Thank you, Don."
I was watching this morning. I said, "You know, you really tore that song up. The whole thing was great. You know, you and Tina, the interplay between both of the artists was fantastic." You know,
yes, Rick, and I saw Rick. I met Rick for the first time personally years after we did that. Out at the what's the place out there in LA that the Universal Theater out there where we were performing. Mm-hmm. And Rick was standing there, and I walked up to him and I said, "Man, you know, I know." I said, "You're a bad brother, man." I said, "You know, you do all the other stuff." Mm-hmm. I said, "You know, I can imagine what you would have did on that song." And you know what he told me? Mm-hmm. I couldn't have did that. He said, "You got down, brother."
Right.
He said, "I couldn't deal what you did."
You did. Yes, indeed.
So, nice. You know, I take that. Thank you.
Did you get a chance to perform that live on stage on the concert scene with her? That song?
No, never. Mm-hmm. No, because we went on two different.
Right.
You know, her career went on. And I was still trying to. Mm-hmm. You know, I went back home, man, and got back with my boys. And, you know,
that was a big record.
I still practiced, but I wasn't pushing what, you know. So I never got to do, but one time she was in Detroit and I went to the show and she pulled me up on the stage to do a song with her.
Okay. That's awesome.
When you were speaking about Dennis Edwards, you said something very important about dealing with personal issues and certain demons. And, you know, there's a real power in presenting that on record. And there's a song that sticks out to me from your self-titled album called Daddy's Coming Home. And the reason why it stuck out to me is because there's like a real sincerity to it, you know, straight, clear, to the point. And I just wanted to know where your head was at when you created that record, and also was there like a conscious effort to place it on that album to kind of, you know, kind of expand the depth of it, because it's a little strays away from the, you know, romantic side of the album.
Well, it was because that was my first album, man. I went to I got a chance to go to LA in 71. I went to LA. Things wasn't going right for me and here in Pontiac, and I knew that if I didn't get away from here, some other things probably was gonna go wrong too. So I had $1,000 from a stock that one of my uncles left me. I took $500 and I had a newborn baby boy. Mm. And he was 69. I gave his mother, I said, "Here, here's $500 for some diapers and milk when I'm gone. I got my other $500 to try to do something." And I went out there and I met a lady, Kim Weston, at a guy's church. And she had a record company with a guy named Mickey Stevens, which I didn't know anything about him, but I met her at the church. So she said, "I want you to come over and meet my mother, blah, blah, blah." And we did this album called Ronnie McNair. And the reason, Julian, that I did that song, because it came to me that I had this boy. I said, "You know what? For whatever reason, something might happen. I want him to know how I feel." Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I wrote the song, "Daddy's Coming Home." So that's how that happened.
Mm,
and you know what? It's funny you say that, because he right now, me and him was like me and my dad used to be, man. Me and my dad were tight. So my mother left my father when I was about 15. And me and his mother broke up 2 years earlier when he was a little boy. So I just wanted to know I'm here, man, no matter what.
Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful thing.
Yep. Comes across.
I got something he can remember it forever. You know, when I'm gone, he can listen to that.
Yes, sir.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. So, Ronnie, now, and we're going to go back to the Four Tops. Right now, the group is in a we all wish Duke Fakir the best and to get better. Right now, you have Michael Brock in performing with you guys on the road. The opinion feel like it is shared with a lot of us is that every time someone new steps into a role and to fill a shoe or to help another group out, there's a new formula, a new dynamic that must be discovered. So what have you found out through the years when guys have been coming and going? Like, you know, Alex had joined you guys only a couple years ago, so a new dynamic, new formula has to be discovered there. What do you guys do to discover the new formula, and what have you discovered about the current touring unit right now?
Well, not what I discovered, what I know.
Okay.
After, you know, it could be me. Duke was 88 years old, December 26th.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's 69 years, man. Hear me? Mm-hmm. That is a hell of a career to do that.
Right.
But as anything else, boxer gets in the ring and he goes out a winner, but he want to go back in and get his brains knocked out. The baseball player, he's getting older. You can't throw the ball like you used to, man. Come on. And you know that's in us all to not want to leave what you've done that long, okay? So, just like you just said, one thing I know is this. Promoters, when the last original guy from any group leaves the group, right, first thing they're going to say is, well, we're not offering the same money because this is a whole different thing now. Mm-hmm. See, I've been looking at that for a few years now. Mm-hmm. And then, so you have to say, okay, now what's going to happen? So, for me, there's a plus, and there, you know, I'm sad because Duke is gone, but at the same time, I'm happy because we got a guy named Mike Brock. Mm-hmm. That's one of the greatest singers you could find. Mm-hmm. We're working with him by the movements a little bit on stage, but he's getting it. when you're a guy that's been on your own all the time, he's staying with the Dramatics for a minute.
Right.
That's a whole different thing from the full time. We got a high energy thing. Mm-hmm. You got to do your thing. But to answer the question, Kyle, that it's great that we have the new thing because now we can be the new Four Tops and be like the older Four Tops used to be. I'm proud of myself.
Man. Well, you should be, man. We're proud of you. We're honored to have you on the show. Let's give Ronnie McNair a nice round of applause, man. And thank you for coming on the R&B Showcase. And we appreciate you coming on and sharing such great history. And had a lot of fun having you on the show, man. So thank you very much for being on the show. And again, I want to thank my co-host, Mr. Kevin White.
Thank you.
Mr. Julian Seward.
Always a pleasure.
And
good co-host, to meet you, Julian.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. Absolutely.
And of course, co-host and producer, Mr. Kyle Mack.
Thank you.
One more time, give it up.
Too,
give it up for
Ronnie. I didn't know you other two guys. I know your other henchmen right there.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know y'all.
Yeah, they're with me every week. We're all together on the radio every week. You know, when Julian does a show on the station before, he does a show coming on early in the day and then comes on my show. So he's part of this team, too, for the R&B Showcase. So we appreciate having him here. So. Well, thanks again. One more time for Ronnie Mack from Pontiac. Give it up, Ronnie.
Thank you.
Current member of the fabulous Four Tops.